Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, along with Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. Special live edition from the NCAA Division I Wrestling Championships in Cleveland, Ohio. We're at the Q. Right out of the gate here, we have a great guest, Arizona State head wrestling coach Zeke Jones, 1991 world champion. And you were part of that 1988 national championship team. Let's maybe start with that. How cool is that to know that you were part of that team that you're trying to get to that point? It's 2018. That was, what, 30 years ago now? You were a NCAA team champion with no champions. Had a finalist with you, but had to be special to be part of that.
Yeah, you know, one, thanks for having me on and being a part of this edition. Yeah, it was a special time, you know, the opportunity to be on a team that had never won a national championship. And to do it west of the Rockies, right, and... the opportunity to compete with some great men who had high goals, and you know, it all came together that Saturday night. We were in fourth place going in on Saturday, and I think Iowa was pretty much locked to win it. But we had a great consolation round. We came back, bunched third places, and scored some bonus points along the way, and were able to capture a championship.
Iowa was the standard bearer at that time, but I think for about three consecutive years, you guys placed ahead of the University of Iowa. That's what you want to get to. You want to place ahead of those great teams. You want to be in that conversation again. How are you going to get to that point where we're talking about Arizona State being in the top four consistently?
Well, when you had said, you know, that 30-year reunion, it's a little bit of past meets the present, right? And having a team now with guys like Zahid and Anthony and Tanner and Shields and, Sursis and Milhoff and the whole group is that they see greatness from their history. And so it's something they can touch, feel, identify with, and to motivate them, right? For them to see that, you know, if I continue to work hard, we work as a team, we wrestle for each other, that we can do something like that. So it's great to have that team back. And then obviously our group competing this weekend get to see it.
Bobby Douglas was the architect of that team. Did he press the importance of winning a championship, or did it just develop organically?
No, when Bobby came into our home and recruited us, it was very clear that he said, you come here, we can win a national championship. That was something that I think he said in every home, because it seemed to resonate through the team with all those guys that came in. I was very fortunate to come in a great class. Dan St. John, a two-time national champion here from Ohio, presenting awards on Saturday night, a Sun Devil, Townsend Saunders, Tommy Ortiz, myself, and the others. You know, but that recruiting class was the class that Bobby, it was a group of sophomores at the time, where he had already had Davies, Ginther, Gressley, and they were all established, and he needed that next final recruiting class to get us in position to win. And, it was Bobby's vision and dream.
You're known as much for your international accolades as anything. Did you know when you graduated that you were going to go to the next step and go international?
Well, it was certainly... Bobby Douglas had always said to me, you know, coming to Arizona State's not a 4 or 5 year plan, but an 8 to 10 year plan. And it's the same thing we tell our guys, is that, you know, guys like Zahid, he just doesn't want to be an NCAA champion, right, or multiple time. He wants to be a world and Olympic champion. So I think that the kids that are coming to Arizona State, the kids that we're tracking and talking to, are saying, you know, I want to be a four-time national champ. I want to be a world Olympic champion. That's the same thing Bobby did that we're attempting to do now. And, you know, in 4 years, we finally had our first world medalist, right? So he'd taken second in the world. Of course, junior medal, but it doesn't matter. A world medal is a world medal in that that's what our kids are aspiring to do and then now doing. You know, of course, this group, as it graduates and moves on to international wrestling, I think we'll see. But it was certainly my goal coming through as a kid and then now as a coach.
You've had that experience as a coach in college, coach international, with all of your experience at USA Wrestling. What's the intangible that puts a guy that medals at the World Championships over the top from just someone else?
I would say that extreme competitiveness. I've watched some guys that weren't very good, but they were extreme competitors and gave extraordinary effort. And I think that's the difference. If, you know, everybody's at a different skill level, some are, you know, world class, multiple gold medalist type guys, but I've seen some guys that were kind of that second and third tier, but they willed themselves to win. And I think that's the difference in getting a medal.
When you look at a guy like Zahid Valencia, I mean, you know, one career loss to this point. When you've been that elite, it's hard to tell differences from year to year. What are the differences you see this year from him from 1 year ago?
Well, I think in Zahid, you see maturity, you see wisdom and knowledge that, you know, he's been through it now. He understands the sessions, the times, how to get ready energy-wise, you know, mental focus, preparation, concentration. I think he's better at all those. I do think that he has added some skills to his wrestling. You know, it's like anything when they said Michael Jordan's the greatest of all time. Well, he can't shoot the three. Well, Michael Jordan would go out and shoot 100 threes. And then, well, he can shoot the three, but he can't make a layup. Then all of a sudden, Jordan was the best at making a layup. I think it's the same thing with Zahid. When he hears something that they say, well, you know, he's good, but he can't pin somebody or he can't. He immediately goes to work in that area. And I think that's the sign of somebody that is trying to not just win a national title, but achieve true greatness, is being great in all three positions, being, you know, increasing his wrestling IQ. And I think that's where he's headed now as a sophomore and still really developing those things.
When you look at the team you have, you guys have been right there, I think 8 to 10, 11, 12 in the rankings most of the season. And those teams in the pack in front of you from maybe 3 down to where you've been are pretty jammed up as well. What will it take for Arizona State to win a trophy this weekend?
Yeah, you know, I kind of look back, and although I guess people could say our team has done well, I'd like to say that we've underperformed. That's my fault. I'd say Anthony's the best 15 seed in the country. I'm not the guy who wants to draw Anthony Valencia if I'm a second seed or a higher seed. You know, Ali Nazir is a 15th seed. He's beaten Coleman Scott. I mean, to say that those guys aren't capable, they're capable. Now, it's like anything. They have to show up and be able to execute technically, tactically, as we know, get off the bottom. But I really feel our upside is good. Our downside is, you know, I think it's where we're at right now. Of course, could you do worse than where you're at? Of course you can. But I, like all the coaches probably coming in, I feel pretty optimistic. But I do think that, you know, although maybe other teams would be surprised if we finished higher, I would say we're just probably hitting our expectation.
You were head wrestling coach at Penn. Compare and contrast what that's like being at Penn with maybe, I don't want to say higher academic standards, but certainly that's the what you go into it knowing that there's some sort of an academic hierarchy there. What's the difference between being at Penn and Arizona State?
I tell you, both great institutions. Like you said, an Ivy League school, Penn. It's a tremendous place to coach and to learn and grow for me personally and the young people. I would say that if you're comparing them, they're not much different. You know, you'd be surprised. You know, And I've talked to some Penn kids and, you know, they sound like any other kids. Now, if you want to talk about world politics or debate, it's like there's a switch in their brain and all of a sudden it comes out like an articulate 45-year-old who understands the nuances of global politics. I would say that if you're contrasting I don't, or, you know, that's the contrasting part of it. Maybe the comparison part is they're young people, you know, they're developing in all the different ways. They have high goals on the wrestling mat, in the classroom, you know, relative level. You know, a kid like Tanner Hall, Cade Belshay, both were admitted into the Ivy League, but still chose to come to Arizona State, primarily, I think, because of their wrestling goal, but primarily more is the Barrett's Honors College, which is the number one honors college in the country. And it's within ASU's campus, 5,700 students, average ACTs of 29, average GPAs of 3.9. 50% of the kids that get accepted into the Ivy League still go to the ASU Barrett's Honors College because of its academic rigor and excellence. So there is a place for a kid like Tanner Hall, 3.9 GPA, mechanical engineering, that Barrett's can give him an academic experience, Ivy League-like, but have a world-class wrestling experience too.
You've been an advocate for the women's wrestling movement, wanting to see that be NCAA sanctioned. However, they are freestyle. In 25 years, if we're sitting here, are we going to see college wrestling be freestyle wrestling?
I would say, you know, as the national coach, when I was the national coach, as if you ever said, hey, let's all go just a freestyler, you know, it would always feel like a no, right? That'll never happen. I think the approach I went at, which was, hey, we're not trying to change. Let's get as close as we can together to the rules. And the only reason why we're trying to do that is, one, preserve folk style for the people that love it in America, but also give our best freestylers a chance to be world great. The women have it. They've got it figured out. You know, they started freestyle right within the collegiate system, and that's helping them tremendously. And they're doing with not very many athletes, right?
Didn't you get your butt kicked by Trisha Saunders?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. What was that like? Just having that humble pie right away.
It sucked. You lose wrestling matches. You don't like them. I don't care if it's Trisha or, you know, Andy Hamilton or whoever it is. You don't want to get beat. But she, you know, I guess it makes me feel better. She's got more world titles than anybody in this gym right now. But we grew up four streets apart. I grew up on Foster Avenue, and she was on Dalton Avenue. And we grew up, her two brothers, you know, wrestled, one at Arizona State, one at Michigan. They were a wrestling family. Father, grandfather wrestled at Michigan. My brother wrestled at Iowa State. We were wrestling families in the same neighborhood. And, you know, she beat me 20 times in a row, 100 million times in a row. I beat her the last two times. She said, well, it's time for me to retire at 11. And she went on to do gymnastics, but then she started her wrestling career back up when she came to Arizona State, because her brother, Andy McNaughton, was my training partner, and we both signed at Arizona State. And then Trisha moved out there after she graduated college. That's kind of how that all happened.
Do you think people understand how good Chris Pendleton was? He's your assistant coach. I mean, you look at some of his NCAA tournament runs when he won his two championships. Those were dominating. Do you think your athletes really understand how dominating he was at this tournament?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. I know that when Chris grabs a hold of Zahid, he knows. Because, you know, of course, not only is he very skilled, he's probably got 30 pounds on him, but I think he also, when you watch Chris work on the mat, you know, you think about how he moves, right? I mean, he's a giant version of John in some ways, right? He does other things too. But, you know, when I was the national coach and he was an athlete, I had a hard time with him. I couldn't pull him away from coaching. I wanted him to be an athlete, and I couldn't pull him away from coaching. Now that he's coaching with me, I can see why. He's got the coaching gift. He's a fantastic teacher, and obviously he won two national titles and on four national championship teams, right? That run with Cormier and Hendricks and Zach, I mean, that was a good group. So I'm sure, you know, obviously his wrestling background's excellent.
What's the window for these guys understanding wrestling history? Things go so fast. Mm-hmm. Do they know 5 years before them? Do they know who Stephen Neal is and some of these guys that set the or blaze the trail?
Yeah, you know, I think it's some do and some don't. I mean, you know, some kids like Zahid and Anthony scour the internet to learn wrestling and who's good and who's not. Kid like Cordell lives in Chicago, Illinois, didn't even know who Tanner Hall was until Tanner threw him on his back 800 times. You know, then he's, oh, okay, I get it now. I think they're all different, right? You know, some kids grow up in that social media, cell phone life. Most do. But, you know, I just ran into a kid, you know, we're recruiting out of Pennsylvania, doesn't even own a cell phone. And, you know, that's more of the rare kid. So I think they're all different.
As far as your history, though, you look back, you were a world champion in 91, have all that connection with Dave Schultz and a lot of these great icons. Have they appreciated what you were able to accomplish in your international career and really advancing us to the point we are right now?
I think, you know, I don't know how much our kids on our team necessarily know. I think when I was a kid and watching the 72 team, right, Gable, and even before then, the 60s, Blue Ball, and of course, information was harder to get, but I think we've done a pretty good job of capturing. It could be better, but it's hard, right? Because it was the 60s, 70s, but to capture that time. But I think we've done a pretty good job. I think I know who those guys are and I understand our history. Have we told the history of 92 and 96 at a deep level? I don't think we really have. And I mean, we know who John is and Kenny and Tom and Terry and Bruce and Kevin and Kenny, you know, the group. You know, but I don't know that we've really, really captured that history and have told the story of it, because, like you said, that's a pretty special group. We all know them individually. How did it come together? How did the team win a world title? What were the dynamics on the team? Where did they live? Who did they train with? How did they get there? Who did they have to beat? I don't know that we've done that collectively as a team, just individually.
There is a tendency to maybe romanticize the past because you talk about those names and John Smith, but it did feel like there was this special era of training that they were just going to get to a higher level. Kevin Jackson said, if Tom and Terry are winning titles, I'm not being left out. He just wanted it. Are we to that point where guys want that they're in that level where if Jordan Burroughs gets it, they got to get it too?
I would say so.
Are we?
I would say that no one wants to be the only guy not winning on the team. I think that's probably anywhere, right? Is it a sense of, let's, you know, these consecutive years, right? We're coming up on consecutive years of the Kyles and the Jordans. And, you know, Jordan kind of started the propelling of that generation, right? In 08, when I got there in 08, 09, 08, and Jordan came on in 11, you know, Jordan was really, before him, my group was Varner, came on, and Herbert. But it didn't really happen until Jordan came, right? And Jordan, I think, has propelled those years and the handoff to Kyle. One team title. It's going to be really interesting to see now, can they back-to-back it and continuing it in a top two and really in a number one position. We didn't even do that in the 92-96 team, 88, 92, 96, the group I came through with. We got two of them, and we had some seconds and some thirds, kind of like this group, I guess. But it'll be interesting to see if they can repeat again. And just the last piece on that, as we know, it's not just internally, we're affected by the external things, right? The things going on with the Russians. And when we broke up the Soviet Union, that helped us. Is it the doping is helping us now because the Russians can't do it? You know, I don't know, but the external factors matter too, right?
When you look at your vision, look back on your vision for the regional training centers and your grand plan starting back about a decade ago, did things come together the way you thought they would? Did they come together faster than you thought they would or slower than you thought they would when you looked down the road, you know, for where the United States might be in 10 years? What did it look like in your mind?
Yeah, I think the regionalization of wrestling was a reaction to the centralization of wrestling. I felt that prior to myself getting there, that the goal was to try to get the U.S. team to kind of be in one location all the time year round. And I just didn't see that the college coaches like that. And so when I got there, my first thought was, you know what, if you can't beat them, join them. And then the thought was, well, instead of having one good center, the OTC, why don't we have five of them? And so we came into some funding, we raised some money and just said, hey, here's Kale. It was really Tommy Rollins. Tommy saw the model that the RTC, you know, the ASU and Sunkist had, Iowa had with their group there, Oklahoma State had, prior to that time frame, years before, and Tommy says, you know, we're going to do that same thing. It was perfect timing, too, because Tervell was graduating, Keith Gavin, Reese, Angel Escobedo, the group that had come through there, it was perfect timing. He raised the money. And then Tommy and I basically worked together and I said, hey, as the national coach, you know, we're not going to try to grab your guys and bring them to the OTC. We promise. But you have to make a commitment to get them all the things they need at Ohio. I've got to trust that you'll do that. And I didn't even have to say it that way. I knew he would do that. And then you had Roselli, right, who was a world-class coach. And we said, then I started to say, all right, what piece are you missing, Tommy? What do you think you might need we can help you with? And that's all I try to do at every location, not just his. Same thing at Penn State. All right, Cale, what do you need? John, what do you need? And so that's how that grew to where then they said, oh, you know, I don't mind sending my guy to the OTC now because – they're not going to get grabbed. You know, they're not going to get pulled into the OTC. That, I think, made them want to be a part of the U.S. program more. So then there was trust. Then once we had the trust and then we were actually helping fund them, you know, giving them money. They're like, usually, you know, you're trying to take our money. No, we'll actually give you money. What do you need? Do you need a training partner? Do you need a coach? What do you need? And we'll help you fund it. That raised the game for us. That's when trust and belief and in the system and their system and believing in them, then it worked. Then coming to camp was easy and training, and I think that elevated us.
Did you make your job harder now based off what you brought into play?
I knew when I did it, I wouldn't be at USA Wrestling forever, and I knew I'd have to figure out what to do because, yeah, I've made my job harder. I know I did. But I guess I didn't know where I would land. But landing at Arizona State made me say, okay, I got the number one wrestling club in the world and the number one wrestling vision. I call them the number one most influential person in the sport of wrestling that doesn't coach an athlete or put a singlet on. And that's Art Martori. And Art has the vision and understands how to put people on top of the podium. He doesn't try to coach them and he doesn't try to wrestle them. He tries to make sure that we have these regions had what they needed. Well, now Art realizes and he's happy that he doesn't have to support five locations because they're self-supported now. So he's super happy. But then what that does for us, obviously, is now he can focus on us. And his competitive juices are flowing. He hasn't been to the NCAA tournament in years. He came last year for the first time. He'll be there this time. And I just think I start to think, well, if we're going to fight these RTCs, Art and Sunk is a good place to do it.
Give us one story as we end this about someone underestimating you. You wrestle 114.5. Someone thinking, oh, you know what, this little guy. Give us one story about someone.
Well, you guys will never know who these two are, I would think. Well, you would know, but maybe the general wrestling public. Pete Ranella and Brad Rozanski. When I graduated college, I moved to Bloomsburg and to become an assistant coach for $13,000. And they both won Pennsylvania State titles and they were coming out of high school. And I I first got the job and I came through there and I met them really quick. And I still didn't have any hair on my face at 22 years old. I graduated college. I was still a little 114 pounder. And I just remember Brad Rozanski looking at me like, this guy can't be that good. Look how little he is. And he's frail. And Rozanski's like 133 pounder and 141 and won a lot. And Pete did too. And I just thought, boy, look at that face they're giving me. So I couldn't wait in the fall when I moved to Bloomsburg and got him in the room and put my hands on him. And then they realized that was the year I actually had won the worlds. So I think I would say that's the funnest story I remember. Yeah. And nobody would ever know. But I would say in the reverse, the guy that you would never think looked like a wrestler who was perhaps the greatest of all time, or at least in the conversation, which was Valentin Jordanov. No muscle, looked like John Smith skinny, but he had the gift like no others. And it's always fun and interesting, right, to run into somebody doesn't look like a wrestler, but is.
Yeah, because you would think Brandon Slay against Satiev, you would think Slay is going to just destroy this guy. He wouldn't be the underdog, but clearly Satiev has a reputation of being the best maybe ever.
Yeah, that's so, the beauty of the sport.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, thanks for taking this time. Had a lot of fun. Appreciate it. It was fun catching up with you. And all the best at the NCAA championships. This is what it's all about. 30 years ago, you did it with your team, and I know you want to get to the mountaintop again. So
yeah, appreciate it.
Congratulations on that great piece of history.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for joining
us. Have a good one. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Zeke.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Who we got up next, Kyle?
Looking around here.
Looks like Shane has Teague Moore coming up here.
I like that. Man, he's one guy I've never had a chance to interview, so this is a lot of fun. Yeah, I'm, Teague Moore was my hero growing up, so it'll be fun to pick his brain. We got Teague Moore coming in here, 118-pound NCAA champion, 1998. Man, let's go with that first. That gives me chills just talking about that. When you pinned David Morgan with a defensive fall, pretty emotional time for you. You got up and had a pretty emotional reaction. When you think about that match, how important is that to you now that that was, what, 20 years ago now?
Yeah, 20 years ago this year. Extremely important, I guess, in like the timeline of things and the amount of time and work that went into it. As we'll see on Saturday night, these guys that take titles home away from here, it's really emotional because of the effort, the commitment that has gone into this, and it all culminates in a 7-minute match. And we've all wrestled hundreds, maybe thousands of these matches, but that one match determines really where your name is going to be left in history. So it's good. It's exciting.
Getting to that point, you came to Oklahoma State. You wrestled it as a true freshman. Mm-hmm. Did you know it was going to be that hard to win an NCAA championship?
I think I did. Having watched, I had two older brothers that wrestled in college, one that wrestled at App State, and then one that wrestled at, my brother Ty wrestled at North Carolina, Chapel Hill. So I had seen the national championships before. I knew how big of a mountain that was to climb. But, you know, my freshman year, really a disappointing national championships for me, but that really lit the fire of what needed to happen. And I believe it was after my freshman year that just made that full commitment. Coach Smith kept us, we had the ability to stay and train during the summertime and, put a lot of time in, took a 2-week trip over to South Korea and wrestled some of their Olympians and some of their world medalists. And that really helped propel me forward. My sophomore year came back in and, I believe it was, a 2-seed. My sophomore year, I think, and fell short. I ended up fourth that year, but it really helped lead to my junior year to that title.
Teague, we were talking in the Hilton lobby this morning about 1998 when you were here, and the tournament was in the Wohlstein Center.
Yeah,
and I think 11,000 people in the stands, and you know, no live television. Could you have ever imagined what we have today, where we've got 20,000 people in the stands, all session, you know, you can watch it from your living room, anywhere, you know, anywhere you are on earth, you can watch this tournament. And then, you know, back in the day, I think, you know, if you didn't find out, if you weren't here and you weren't listening to a radio, you weren't finding out what happened until, you know, the next day.
Yeah.
Just looking at it from what it's become, what are your thoughts on that, on how much the wrestling world has changed just in 20 years?
It's interesting. You know, 20 years ago, if you, at that time, you would have said, where will this be in 20 years? I don't know that many people would say that we would be where we're at right now. So I have friends that choose to, well, one, it's really tough to get tickets, but they chose to stay at home. They'll have 8 TVs set up in their living room. They'll be watching every match live time, right? They basically, they'll have an NCAA party going on for 3 days. To know that we live in a world today that on your phone, you can be watching these matches live time, I don't think we would have conceived of that 20 years ago, right? And for me, I guess I look at it from the perspective of, okay, if we've gone this far in 20 years, where can we go 20 years from now? And that's really an interesting a viewpoint or a question. Where can this thing be in 20 years? I believe we could blow this thing off the charts in 20 years if we keep growing like we do.
You've had some interesting concepts. Was it the first to 10 concept? I think you ran with that a little bit.
Yep.
Where is that? I mean, just conceptually.
So that was that idea came out. A friend of mine, he and I started running some tournaments together. We still do the National Collegiate Open together for the year-end red shirt and backup tournament. And we had always debated, like, what would be the best form of wrestling? What would be the best set of rules? And that's where, out of those conversations, we came up with this idea of take the clock away. Because I think the clock interrupts some really good wrestling, especially in the collegiate level. And you make the point of the match to score 10 points. You reach 10 points first, you win. And so we you know, I don't know that my wife enjoyed it that much, but we pulled our own funds together and we really hustled to get some marketing behind it. We tried the event the first year and it was a success. I believe we had three Olympians that came out of that one event. Furthermore, we wanted to try a second season, but at the end of the day, it really came down to, we had set the dates, we had got the locations, and it was going to be in Pittsburgh and in Washington, D.C., so we were going to try two more events with it, but my brother Ty passed away, and I really, like, I don't know how to put it into words, I just kind of, like, lost the wind in my sails with it, and so I stepped away from it, and interestingly enough, I was talking with Jordan Burroughs at the World Junior Trials last October, and he had asked me about it. And so it definitely sparks that little interest that I have that sometimes I wonder, why do I do the things I do? But I would love to put an event together again, because what we saw in that event was guys just purely wrestling. They were wrestling for what we're hoping guys are going to do, put points on the board. And it was exciting and it was fun. It was a success.
Your brother Ty Moore is someone that gets brought up a lot when they talk about you. What did he mean to you and where you are today?
So I think for me, Ty was like he was the epitome benchmark for me of what I wanted to attain. In high school, he was a four-time Pennsylvania state champion, only lost once in high school. So growing up, the team that Ty was on and what he was able to accomplish, it really kind of set in my mind, that's the standard of what you're trying to accomplish. And then I watched, he went to North Carolina in college and he faltered in college. He didn't reach his goals in college. And so for me, he became a mentor, somebody to learn from. And he really helped guide my direction moving forward. Even to this day, I tell my athletes, a lot of the rules and regulations, the philosophy that I coach from, came out of my brother, right? Like, I, every year when I'm recruiting, I say, if this was Ty Moore, if this was my brother that I was coaching, how would I coach him, right? Or how would I handle the shortfalls or the successes that he had in his career? How would I handle that as a coach from a coaching perspective to try and keep him on the right path? And so he meant the world to me, you know, and I just went to the Pennsylvania States last week, and man, it is amazing the iconic legend that he still has in Hershey, Pennsylvania. You know, it's a state tournament. There's 50 of them around the country. But when you go to Hershey, for some reason, we've had a lot of four-time state champions. His name just kind of, it resounds with the wrestling fans there in Hershey.
Being from Iowa, there's a resentment when a great recruit goes out of the state. So like Brody Teske goes to Penn State. When you're from Pennsylvania and you go out of state, are they mad at you or are they okay with you going to another school, you being Oklahoma State?
Back when I was coming out, so in 1995, no, there wasn't. There was obviously Pennsylvania people saying, why aren't you going to Penn State? Why aren't you going to Pitt or Lehigh? But when I chose to go to Oklahoma State had just come off a national championship. And Coach Smith, it was just getting into his coaching career. So I never caught a lot of backlash with it. If I would transplant myself into today's world and was having the success that I had in high school, I do believe if I were Teague Moore wrestling and graduating in 2018 and I chose to go to Oklahoma State, I'd probably catch some backlash with what Penn State is doing. Because Pennsylvania is now, really, they have that program that everybody can adhere to. The high school wrestlers, the high school coaches, the fan base in Pennsylvania. We've now seen what happens when they're able to keep the best. It's pretty amazing.
You've got a guy with, in Terrell with such a distinct style. The Terrell brothers have such a distinct style. As a wrestling coach, how much fun is that to play around in maybe some different positions and fine-tune some of the things that they have done?
You mean after I take a whole roll of Tums to deal with it?
Yeah, sure.
They are, so number one, they are everything a coach could want because these guys work extremely hard. They're students of the sport, right? If they watch somebody wrestle, both of them, David and Josh is the same way. They'll love to analyze and figure out, why is this guy so good in this position? What's he doing? What's he doing with his body? How is he working the guy to get the position open to attack? So truly students of the sport. And those are really fun guys to coach because when they have downfalls and when they're willing to listen to make the changes that they need, those type of athletes will open their eyes, they'll open their ears, and they'll listen to you as a coach. And I love coaching them. You know, they They sometimes give me ulcers. But at the end of the day, I love working with him every single day. I'm really excited for Josh to see what he can do here. He's got a tough first round match. An opponent that's similar to him, Montoya from Northern Colorado, has had some really good wins this season. And then he's maybe fell short in some matches that he shouldn't have. So they're really similar in that effect. I do believe that when Josh and he take the mat, it's going to be a pretty high scoring match. I think there's going to be some points put on the board.
You were on the U23 coaching staff, and obviously you don't have a lot of time to get to know those guys and work with those guys. And then sometimes you're going to wind up coaching against them.
Yeah.
In the college season, what is that whole experience like? What kind of preparation do you do as a coach getting ready to coach somebody that you're just getting to know?
So for me, number one, that was the first time that I was able to help USA Wrestling at a World Championships. So it was really exciting for me. I basically took it from the perspective of try and learn as much as I can about each of these athletes before we go. Once we got to Poland, I basically just put myself out there to those guys and said, you let me how I can help you. And it turned out that six of our guys came with their personal coaches. They knew the plan they were on. Two of the guys did not have a personal coach. So Richie Lewis, who's wrestling for Rutgers here, and Ty Walls, who's an assistant at Virginia Tech. Those were the two guys that I was able to kind of connect with, and I was going to corner throughout the event. And as it turns out, both of those guys turned in really good performances. Richie brings home the gold for us. Ty brings home a bronze. For me, it was a really exciting experience because those guys were stepping on a world championship mat for the first time. And so I was able to connect with them, maybe just talk with them about some of the mental game that goes on that you battle in your own mind before you go out there. And afterwards, it was fun for me because they gave me a lot of thanks. Of helping them through some of those mental barriers that they maybe would not have overcome had we not talked about it before the competition or during the competition.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did you see Richie grow from match to match there? It seemed like his confidence was growing significantly each time he stepped on the mat.
Yeah, it was really cool to see that he was hitting some very tough guys early in the tournament. But every time he got his hand raised, he realized, first thing, Richie is built extremely well. His wrestling's built extremely well for freestyle. He keeps really good head position, and he blocked a lot of the foreigners out with his forehead, which didn't allow them to get to their best offense. Number two, he wrestles the edge extremely well. Sometimes as Americans, and it's because we deal with folk style where we're not getting penalized for going out of bounds. Richie did a really good job of those close calls on the edge. He found a way to get to scoring positions that not a lot of our college Americans are exceptional at right now. In that tournament, he was exceptional at it. So it was really fun to see him break through.
Would you like to see us go to a straight step out in college wrestling?
Absolutely. I think high school and college both. Like, so the last couple of weeks we're doing a lot of recruiting and watching what is going on in high school, and obviously we're watching the college. And we prolong. It's tough for the fans to watch at the high school level. I mean, if I counted on average, I'm going to say there's probably 8 to 10 resets every high school match. Well, if we just add the out of bounds step out rule, you're probably going to cut 8 to 10 step outs to 2. So you keep the match moving quicker, right? You keep the action moving a lot more. I would like to see it go to that because it continues to morph our college into the international. And I think if our ultimate goal in this sport, yes, we want NCAA champions and we want national champions, but we also want world and Olympic champions, and we should prepare our young men and women to be wrestling on that world stage every time they compete. We shouldn't give them one set of playing rules and then say, okay, completely adjust everything you just did for 6 months and now try to be the best on the world stage and do it in a 3-month period. I think that's kind of backwards the way that we're doing it. So.
Were you always a joy to coach?
No,
you
I
weren't?
Was. Yeah, I was just with Coach Smith last night, and almost every time I see Coach or I get time, and I don't get a lot of time to spend with Coach Smith or see him, but every time I do, I always apologize for being the athlete that I was. Yeah, I gave Coach some major handfuls. As a matter of fact, in that national championships in Cleveland in 1998, I almost got kicked out of the tournament. Not a lot of people know this, right? Came off of my first match. I was wrestling Steve Garland from Virginia, we knew it was a big team race for us and we needed bonus points. But Steve Garland just kept, he just kept putting himself in the match. I'd get close to the major and then he'd close it down to 6 points. And I'd get close to the major and he'd close it down to 5 points. Well, I came off the mat and it was really tight like it is here. Press row was right off of the wrestling mats. And me being, this spaz athlete that I was, I kicked the table right when I came off. I was really frustrated. I kick a table, right? 1998, laptops are still kind of new. And this press row laptop goes flying, right? Bust the screen, shatters the guy's thing, right? So I go back to the hotel. My hotel phone rings. I'm waiting for the evening session. And Pat Smith, who was an assistant at the time, Pat says, Teague, we need you to come back over to the arena. You have to go in front of some committee. They're talking about kicking you out of the tournament. Now, if you know Pat, Pat was always pranking people, right? So I said, Pat, would you leave me alone? Like, I'm just trying to get some rest before this next round. Not funny. He's like, I'm dead serious. I'm coming to get you at the hotel. So sure enough, 10 minutes later, he's knocking on my door. He's like, let's go. You got to go get in front of this committee. So they bring me back over to the arena. John explains to me, look, you screwed up big time, right? And they're literally going to vote to allow you to move forward in the tournament. So I'm thinking, nice going, spaz. So I go in front of the committee, right? And there's like 20 people in there in the committee. And they say, look, this is what we've been told happened during the match. Can you speak to what happened? And so I told it from my perspective. You know, I was in the match, very frustrating match, and things didn't go the way I wanted to go. I came off. I kicked what was in front of me. It was a table. I didn't mean to break the laptop. I'll repay whatever I got to pay. I'll do whatever I got to do. You know, my apologies. And they sent me out of the room. And for about 20 minutes, I stood outside. And like your whole world passes before you, right? And you're thinking, okay, I've screwed up, but this one's a big one. So they brought me back in the room. And Bruce Baumgartner, who had known me most of my life, I had an older sister that went to Edinburgh. So as a little kid, I was running around the Edinburgh gym quite a bit. And he spoke on my behalf and said, look, I don't think this is who this young man is. He made a bad mistake, and we shouldn't ruin his future before it. So they've allowed me to stay in the tournament, thank goodness, and things ended up turning out okay.
You still listen to some Guns N' Roses, Metallica?
Absolutely.
I mean, how is that in your mix, your iPod now? I mean, now no CDs anymore?
Yeah, I don't need it anymore. I don't have a Walkman or a Discman like I did back in those days. But when we do go to work out, my guys will quite often hear a Metallica playlist pop up. So it's possibly the best workout music you could ever wish for. So.
All right. Well, thanks for taking this time with us here at the arena. 20 years ago, you won the NCAA championships in a really dramatic fashion, getting a fall over David Morgan from Michigan State.
Yep.
And what a special opportunity to have you here. So
Thank you guys for allowing me to be on, and I appreciate what you guys are doing for the sport. I think things like this, your podcast and what you guys do for the sport, helps take us to that next level, and I'm excited to what we can do in the next 10 years and next 20 years.
All right, we appreciate it. We're looking forward to seeing your guys out here compete, and they always bring it, so we appreciate it.
All right, thank you guys.
All right, that was Teague Moore, head wrestling coach at American University. Pretty cool. We've got back-to-back 118-pounders. We had Zeke Jones, and then we had Teague Moore. Yet we're going to have a 150-pounder who might be a little bit shorter, Chris Bono, coming up. So we'll get a chance to talk to him. He's the head wrestling coach at South Dakota State University. And pretty cool that we have some history as we go along with this. 30 years ago, Arizona State wins it. And then 20 years ago, Teague Moore wins his NCAA championship in Cleveland. So to have him here.
We need to get somebody from 2008.
No,
that's a challenge, right?
Well, we got someone here, sort of. I don't know what the history is. I don't know if he accomplished anything in 2008. He probably made a comeback in 2008 because you're always making comebacks. Chris Bono, thanks for being on the mat program. Great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, you got a guy that everyone's talking about, Seth Gross. What has he done for SDSU wrestling, specifically to your campus?
Yeah, he's you know, I don't want to say it's just been him, but he's put all the eyes in Brookings, South Dakota. You know, the fans know him. They all want to come watch him wrestle. And I think what he's done really is elevated the rest of the guys on our team to actually perform a little better.
Has it been fun to see that progression? Because you guys haven't had an NCAA champion individual. Is there a lot of anticipation and pressure on him that to get it done?
You know, the guy's blood pressure's never been raised ever in his life, so I don't know if there's any pressure on him. You know, there's, you know, I get all stressed out as it is, and I get all fired up, and that guy's over there calm and cool. That, you know, so pressure for him, I don't think there's any pressure on him. He loves this. This is, you know, this is fun to him. So it's, I don't think there's any pressure.
Chris, where has he made the biggest gains in his wrestling since he got to South Dakota State?
In his wrestling, I would say, you know, when he first came, he relied on scrambling in every single situation. He wanted people on his legs. I think where he's made his biggest gains has been he actually goes and gets attacks, and then if people do get on his legs, he can wrestle from there. When we first had him, it was his only offense, really. He had offense, but he wanted people on his legs more than him going and getting on people's legs. So that, and I also think his top game has gotten better, you know, every year. I think he's better on top this year than he was last year, even though, you know, what happens now is everybody's been laying there on him and pulling one finger off and not doing anything on the bottom, and he hasn't been turning people as much. But, you know, I think just now that the threat of him turning people has created, you know, no one goes down on him much anymore. And then when he does turn him, he puts matches way out of any realm of someone coming back.
Does wrestling Meredith, who's the number one seed here, bumping up and doing that, does that give him a level of confidence going into this tournament?
You know, what it gave him was it opened his eyes. You know, he got a little tired in the match. You know, he came off and he said, I'm not ready to win the NCAAs right now. And so it was great. It was a perfect time of the year. It was the middle of the year. He realized he wasn't where he needed to be winning a national title in March. And then it really ramped up his training even more and really ramped up, you know, wrestling different guys in the room that were bigger and, really understanding when you know, cause he hadn't had a tight match. So really understanding, you know, I was tired at the end of 7 minutes, and that's not how I want to feel in case I gotta, you know, I'm down by a point in the NCAA finals, how I need to go get it.
Where did that idea originate? Was it you? Was it him? Was it somebody else?
It was him. I went home from practice. I forget what night it was, and I look on Twitter, and I see him and Meredith saying, that would be fun. Yeah, I'm 1-1. We're 1-1. Let's do it. And I'm like, I called him. I said, do you want to do this? He said, yeah. I go, I'm going to try to make it happen. He said, I'll do it. And then it was just the rest was history. Once Twitter took off, I said, dude, there's no looking back. Are we doing it? He's like, yeah, I want to do it. And then it came down to the last minute. You know, and I think we wrestled Friday night or Thursday night, and it was Thursday. And I said, do you want to do this? It was Wednesday night, because I said, do you want to do this? I got to have a guy down to weight at 33. And what people didn't know as well, our 41 pounder was hurt. Henry Pullminer was hurt and wasn't going to wrestle as it is. So we were going to give up. You know, we felt, you know, we didn't have a capable 41 pounder to go against Meredith anyway. So we felt we were going to give up six for the team that way, or we were going to, if we bump them up, we may give up six. And I really thought, everyone gave me a bunch of crap about, you might lose the match, you might do this. I had no doubt in my mind that Seth was going to win, you know, so I was counting on those points. And I said, there's no way we lose with gross wins. Well, it turned out he didn't win, but we kind of got lucky with a pin somewhere where I didn't think we'd get a pin, and it just worked out great. I think it was one of the best things we've ever done, to tell you the truth.
I see you as a lifelong competitor. You love to compete. You love to wrestle. Where did that stem from, that you just want to get out there and just compete all the time?
I don't know. I do love competing. I do love working out. I do love wrestling with these guys. And you know what? The fact that I got older and it's harder, and they actually get me a lot now, that it's gotten even better, you know, because it makes me take care of myself. You know, I want to eat right, and I want to do right, because I want to make sure our guys are as prepared as they are. And, you know, I have to wrestle with Seth Gross. I don't have anybody in the room that's, you know, world class. He's world class wrestler. So I have to make sure that I can give him a feel, you know, and, you know, competing is, you know, like I said, I wish I could still do it, you know.
Such a tight knit community with the NCAA championships where we're sitting right now. You know all these guys. You've competed against them, or they've coached you at some level. What is it like when you're here with all these coaches? Is it friendly? Does the competition go up? What's that like to see it when you're in the hallway?
Yeah, it's friendly until you wrestle against somebody. You know, and you come off and you're like, I thought I was friends with that guy. You know, and then, you know, you see him 30 minutes later and you're hugging him. It's friendly, but you know, it's competition, you know, and it's just like when you're wrestling somebody, you got to be able to leave it on the mat. You can't let what they say to you in this realm, when you go back in the back and they're still mad at you and they yell things at you. You can't let that. I don't let the stuff bother me at all. You know, I remember it, but I don't let it bother me. We all want to win. We all pour our heart and souls into this thing. And we all can't win. You know, so it does get a little heated, but it's all part of it.
What's that switch like when you have to make the switch? Because you're in and it's pretty intense. It doesn't last forever, but when you get that switch, what does that feel like?
Switching back's harder. I can tell you that. But well, yeah, it's just natural. You know, you think you're right. They think they're right. Referee's not helping you at all. And you just, you know, the things that come out of the mouths and some of these coaches in the corners are really unbelievable. And I think it's more of a shock. Like, did he really just say that? You know, if he'd listen in the corner, we're talking to my sister. I'm like, did he really just say that? Or did he really think that guy doesn't deserve a stall call? You know, and then it really bothers me because we really shouldn't be talking to each other in the corner. Worry about your own athlete is what we try to. That's all I ever say. If somebody yells at me, wait, talk to your athlete. Don't talk to me. And, you know, that's the only thing I really say back. And unless it's Doug Schwab. No, I'm teasing.
What you do with Doug? No, I'm teasing.
Yeah, no, Doug's good. We get along great. We really do. He walked into our room when we dueled the other day in February and said, you know, we should wrestle one more time in front of these fans. I said, Doug, oh, you know me. I'll wrestle you whenever you want. And he goes, no. It's embarrassing. People wouldn't want to see that anymore. You know,
I think you're wrong about that. I think you know, that would be cool.
Yeah, but we get along great. I like Doug a lot.
You said, I think about a couple years ago, you're not done yet, though. You got one more left in you, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know when. Nobody wants to wrestle.
Midlands next year?
You know what? I looked up my age group. I want to go to the veterans. I looked up my age group, and I think it's like 44 to 54 now. And I'm 44. And my wife said, if you go out there and wrestle somebody 54, I'll kill you.
10-time veterans world champ then, right?
Yeah, you know, but that's fun. I love it. It's even when I'm running on the treadmill, you think about all the matches you lost and all the opportunities I had to be a world champ and all the opportunities I had to make an Olympic team and I never did it. And it's what made me. It's what makes me as a coach because I don't want these kids to feel what I felt when I feel I don't really have accomplished, you know, what I really set out to do. And so as a coach, it really makes me give everything I got to make sure they're on the right page because I don't want them to ever have the feeling that I have that, you know, I've never really got to where I wanted to be.
You guys are getting great crowds up at South Dakota State, and there's community engagement. I think I've heard about you guys sitting around round tables with people in restaurants up there. How has the community support changed since you got there?
It's times by 100. You know, if that's the way to say it, I don't want to say it's doubled or tripled, but they had support. They were a great Division II program back in the day. So they had people there, but we just went in there and we got to know everybody and we set up these tables of, we had these lunches with people. And then, you know, my first couple of years, I said no I didn't say no to anything. They wanted me to speak. They wanted me to go here. Sometimes they say, can you go speak to this group? And three people showed up, you know, and I spoke and I gave my vision. I told them what we're going to be like. And I said, just give us a chance. And the next thing you know, we have a little success and, we're packing that place and, our guys are entertaining and, you know, we tell them to celebrate. We tell them and they love it. I got my kids in the community meeting with all these people and they're getting to know them. And, you know, these people in Brookings have a vested interest in our kids and our program as well. So it's been challenging, but we laid the groundwork the first couple of years and now we're seeing the rewards of all that hard work.
We had Zeke Jones on as our first guest. And of course, he was coached by Bobby Douglas. So were you. Bobby Douglas is one of those enigmatic guys in our sport. When you think about Bobby Douglas and what he meant to you, how would you summarize Bobby Douglas in your life?
Oh, Bobby, you know, I look back on it. When I first got away from him and I took that job at Chattanooga, I thought he was crazy. And now the longer I'm coaching, I see what an impact he's really played in my career and the things I'm saying and the things I'm doing and the way the kids on our team tease me or the way we used to tease him. You know, the things we say, you know, his famous quote was, you know, you can't do a switch. I learned that in second grade, you know, and I'm saying those things and these guys are on me, but he's played the biggest role in my life as a mentor. You know, and it's, you know, it's been a great relationship when he called me just the day before we left just to talk about the tournament and how we like it, you know, and he would give anything to be sitting in a chair right now. I know, coaching some of these guys, but, he's played a huge role in everything I've done.
Being an NCAA champion, it's what you strive for. When you get a chance to just be here, you know you got it done. What's it like to know that you got it done?
Well, every time I come here, I think about it. I should have had it done twice. You know, that's the problem. I thought I won that match. I wish the rules back then were what they were now. As soon as your hands touch was two, that would have been my title. in Cedar Falls.
97.
In 97. Yeah. But, that's what I think about. So it's kind of depressing to first set foot in the arena, or national final. But it brings back a lot of memories. And, you know, and speaking with Reader, we talk about this all the time. Like someone texted me something about, you know, do we have USA cards for the US Open? I'm like, how is he thinking about the US Open? We're at the national tournament. We should be, you know, single-minded. But yeah, this is the best tournament in the world. There's nothing better than being here for the next 3 days.
Didn't you have a dream before the 97 finals that you were going to win that match? I thought I remember something.
No, I don't remember.
You don't remember?
No, I don't remember. Dream.
I mean, that you were going to win. But Lincoln McIlroy, I mean, that's your rivalry. That was your rival. And among others, when you think about having all of those guys, Kerry Colot, mm-hmm. Bill Zadig, and the list goes on and on, to know you came through that era with so many great guys, that has to give you a level of confidence.
A level of confidence. It was fun. I wish I would have gotten beat by more than just one guy, though. That's kind of what hurts, you know, to lose so many times to him in the most critical matches. Yeah, I wish it was. I wish I would have lost to three or four or five or six of them, you know, but losing to one guy and knowing you're so close and so many different, you know, I can't remember how many finals of the world team trials and national championships and Olympic trials, you know, to lose to one guy. So, you know, it was a great career.
What are your recollections of the Dapper Dan with Colot?
I remember him very, very well. It's kind of funny how that match sets out. You know, something that I remember really, really well was I was running around their little track in the Fitzgerald Fieldhouse, and I sprained my ankle real bad. You know, and I was like, oh, my gosh, this didn't just happen. Like, I sprained it real bad. And I remember that to this day, how bad it hurt when I was warming up. And I remember, you know what's really funny is I remember getting on the bus to go to the hotel, and I was so thirsty I couldn't talk. I mean, the little things, you know, I remember those, but I do remember it real well. I mean, obviously I've seen the match a bunch of times, so I remember the match, but it's the little things. You know, I remember people thought I was crazy because it was a Friday during Lent, and then we weighed in, and the meal they served had a bunch of meat in it, and I didn't eat the post-match meal. You know what I mean? And we had to be there, so I ate the salad and the veggies, and then I couldn't wait to get out of there to go get a pasta dinner. You know, and I remember those little things, you know. But other than that, and the one thing I do remember too was, they made us work out with the other, with the other team competing from Pennsylvania, like a media workout or whatever. And I was down to weight and I couldn't move. And I got killed. We had to wrestle a match with the, you know, and then I remember winning or tying Colot, and that kid I'd worked out in the room with came up to me. He's like, hey, man, I really appreciate you not going hard against me in that workout in front of the media. And I looked at him. I said, he had no idea. I couldn't move. I was going as hard as I could go, you know, and I remember those little things about it, but it was a great time, and I was happy to be a part of it.
What did you know about Kerry Colot going into that match?
You know what? I watched video one match of him doing a backflip in the state finals to defend his leg. And that was it. And I thought I was going to win. I didn't know him. You know, I'm a Florida guy. You know, it's not like today where you've got all these media outlets and you can watch video. I had to scrap and claw to find a VHS tape of some match, and someone sent me one of him doing a backflip in the state finals and then pinning somebody. And I'm like, wow, whatever. You know, I'm going to go up there and win anyway. And I trained hard and, you know, and went out and wrestled, and you know, it was a great match.
Florida, from my vantage point, seems to be a state where wrestling is really growing or improving at the high school level. When you look back on where it was when you were in high school versus where it is now, can you give us kind of your assessment on the progress that state has made?
It's made huge progress. You know, we'd love to see some programs, you know, I'd love to see some Division I programs open up down there, because all those kids, they can wrestle, but they also think they're all going to the NFL. You know, football is big down there, but there's a lot of great kids in Florida. You know, they're doing a great job down south. And I really attribute it to really all the clubs that are opening up, you know, just like they're doing around the country. And then these kids are traveling all over to compete in national tournaments. So, it's great. You know, I mean, we're a little far away from Florida. We have a hard time recruiting Florida, you know, just because there's 9,000 other schools between here, you know, South Dakota and Florida. But, you know, it's a mistake if those southern schools aren't really recruiting Florida hard.
Hey, Chris, thanks for coming on the podcast. It's a lot of fun having you on here. It's been fun to see SDSU grow in the ranks and just see you guys progress so much, because you're on our radar. You're a team we talk a lot about. So it's been fun to see the progression there, and hopefully you get an NCAA championship out of the deal.
Hey, man, we want a couple.
I know you do. You probably want a couple.
10, but we don't have 10. We'll take 7. Thank you.
Hey, thanks. That's Chris Bono. We're going to bring in Troy Steiner, head wrestling coach at Fresno State. Troy was a four-time All-American for the University of Iowa and state champion in 1992. We'll get him situated here. How are you doing? Good to have you in here, Troy. Great to be talking about Fresno State wrestling. How does that feel for you to know we're talking about the Bulldogs again?
Yeah, it's great for wrestling, the sport of wrestling, and great for the West, for sure. And, I'm just honored to be a part of it.
All right, so when I say this, the more I'm in on his legs, the less he's in on mine. Who said that?
That was my twin brother.
Was it?
Gable said that, told me that to my twin brother. So, it was in that Competitor Supreme video, I know that.
Yep. Getting to that level, I mean, you're an NCAA champion. It's been cool to have a string of three NCAA championships in a row here. You won it. You got it done. What does that feel like for you to know that you made it to the top?
Yeah, I think every year that goes by, you realize how tough it is to get to that point, you know, when you're coaching. I was just talking to Pat Santoro about it. I said, as an athlete, you come in here and you never looked at it the same as a coach, because as an athlete, come in like, I really don't have anyone too tough until the quarters or the semis. Now you're looking at every match as like, this is going to be a tough match. You know, you're looking at every little detail of the opponent, and as an athlete, you really focused on yourself, and you never worried too much about every little thing, you know. So it's very different as a coach, for sure.
Was it more gratifying to see Terry win the next year for you?
Well, it was definitely very gratifying to see him win it. I was not happy myself at the time, but to have him win it definitely helped take care of some of that pain, for sure.
Identical twins historically have a level of competitiveness. What was yours with your twin brother?
Oh, we were very competitive, for sure, but we also worked very well together. We were workout partners, best friends. I mean, you name it, we were very close, and we still remain very close. So we're competitive, but now it's in a much different way. You know, we try to push each other, challenge each other to with our programs or whatever we're doing.
And you ran into each other randomly in the airport?
Yeah,
is that
yesterday.
Right?
Yeah, we talked the night before, and he said he was leaving for Tokyo, and I said we'd leave for NCAAs tomorrow morning too, and then we end up being in L.A. for 3 hours. We both had layovers at the same time. The gates were right next to each other, so it was funny.
And you had no idea?
I had no idea. I actually saw a couple of the girls, or the women, and they came over to me, and then I said, is Terry here? And I said, yeah, he's in the United Lounge. So I called him and said, we're out by gate 70. Why don't you come on out?
That's fantastic. I saw, what was the picture? I saw the great attendance you had earlier this year with a dual meet. I mean, that has to be exciting for you to know that you're getting that kind of response in that area.
Well, I think, partly a lot of it was just the program coming back. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I knew we'd have good attendance that first match. And after that, you hope that they continue. But I think the state out there in the valley, they, for those 11 years that they lost the program, it was hard for them, you know, and they start losing guys leaving the state because they had no options, and I think they knew that they had to support this thing. And every my message that first year out there when I was out talking and before I had a team there, I spoke a couple times a week the whole year, and my message was, we need you in there to support. It's not good enough to just watch on TV or on the websites. We need you to be in the stands. So, you know, and that continued for most of the year. We had attendance of 4,000 or more for every match, and we weren't giving them too much to cheer about this year, I'll tell you that. So it wasn't because we were having a lot of success, but I think they're hungry for wrestling in there. And it's the valley itself is very rich in wrestling.
Are Stephen Abbas, Jerry Abbas, are they involved at some level?
Stephen was helping out with the RTC, but it's a situation we don't have the funds really to fund them like we probably need to. And so, you know, he's working in town, and he's around some, but not obviously not as much as you'd like to have him around. But maybe that'll come in time.
You got a couple Northern Iowa guys coming out to your RTC. What was it about them that made you want them to come to California?
Well, you know, the whole time when I was putting a staff together and recruiting athletes, guys wanted to be a part of this. Because not everyone does. Not everyone wants to be a part of a startup program, and because you're going to have some rough times and struggles, and not everyone wants to be a part of that. And I was looking for guys that wanted to really take on this challenge. And Israel Silva was one that I contacted right away. And then Chamberlain was a kid that, you know, he coming out of high school, he was a guy that probably could have won anywhere. He was one of the top recruits in the country, and he decided to go to Boise State. He wanted to go help them build a program. And then I was looking for a smaller guy, and I saw, I looked around, I asked a lot of people, and I felt in some situations I was pulling too hard, like trying to get people there too hard. And I said, I don't want to have to convince my staff to be here. When am I going to be working? I want guys that want to be here and be a part of this. And then I contacted Joe, and I knew he was looking to get into coaching and still competing, which is something I wanted. And he wasn't sure he wanted to leave Iowa, though. And I had him come out, and I said, come on out and look at it and spend some time, and you figure it out if you want to do this or not. And I think he saw the opportunity just to really help jump start this program, and he's done a great job, you know, out there ever since. And then I was looking to build up our RTC right away and get some guys in there. And I think Blaze came out and visited, and he saw the training situation that he had would have there. And I think it was not that he didn't have a good one at Northern Iowa, but I think he just thought for him he maybe needed a little bit of a change. And I think it's been good for him.
As you look at wrestling in the West region of the country, obviously a huge boost that you guys have given the state of California and the West in general. What's the next step for wrestling out there? What can we do as a sport to anchor things in and grow even more out in that region of the country?
Well, I think obviously the more programs we can start is going to be better. But I think right now, I think we just, like with the Big 12, us being in the Big 12, I think really helps because it forces teams to come out. And they're not just going to wrestle us. They're going to wrestle those other teams. And I've even talked to the coaches in the Big 12 saying, listen, when you come out and do us, you have to pick up another team for sure, maybe two. And you got to go visit Oregon State. You have to go visit Arizona State. You got to hit Stanford once in a while. You know, and I think they'll do that because they understand the importance of it. And, I don't know if there's going to be if we look to realign the Pac-12 and Big 12 together too, that could be very, very well be an option. But if we do that, what I don't want to see happen is we go to an East-West division, because then we do the same thing. We isolate the West, and that doesn't help, I don't think. And that was my biggest thing, is that why I didn't want to go to the Pac-12, is if we do that, then the West is isolated again. And I think with having the connection with the Big 12 and having these teams coming out, it really helps. It really does. And I think that's one thing we got to look to do, is just the teams that do come out, or any teams that come out and duel a team in the West, try to hit a couple, try to come into another competition where it helps just ignite that fire a little bit. So
I appreciate you having you on the podcast. Maybe in the airport, you and the Brands brothers will run into each other. Steiners against Brands. Maybe there'll be a fun little matchup there at some point.
Yeah, maybe,
in the airport.
Maybe so.
Yeah. Appreciate it. This has been a fun podcast. We've had on Troy Steiner. We've had on Teague Moore. We've had on Chris Bono, Zeke Jones. I don't know if it gets better than this. What a great run of four guests here, Andy. But for Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com, I'm Kyle Klingman, the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum. You've been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.